selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. You know, okay, it's actually just so funny because what I love about Shopify is no matter how huge and massive you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control. Yes, daddy. And take your business to the next level because we're business women. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub. That's shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase. Shopify.com/bookclub.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Celebrity Book Club. Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's Celebrity Book Club.
Come read it while it's hot.
Celebrity Book Club.
Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club. Club.
Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hey, hey, my best friend.
My best darling friend.
My dearest oldest friend from Eton. How are you?
From grade school. When we were just little co-eds. How are you doing, darling?
I'm jet lagged, obviously. I just flew in on the red eye from Miami. It was awful. Speaking to advertisers at the Standard all weekend, but I have to say, their brunch is top notch. No one does it like them.
And, I mean, no one even cares about brunch anymore. So if you think they're doing a good brunch, they must be doing something.
Well, I think people care too much about brunch. I think that's the problem. And nobody knows how to... It's too much chaos. But they've figured out a way to manage it down there.
It's so crazy. I literally, like, have not gotten brunch in, like, 9 million years. Like, it's so over...
It's literally, I've never heard of anything more over than brunch. But you know why it's so over is because everything is brunch now. Hot take incoming.
No.
Like, read this in GQ next week. Everything is brunch now.
kind of. I mean, everything in the way that, like, everything is like a matcha corn dog.
Everything is a matcha corn dog and everything is a text message. You're in line, like, wait for an hour and a half and then you'll get it. And it's just like, and it is the all day meal.
And it's like, check in with Resi Plaid. Like, if you don't confirm this on our app and download our app, like, your table will be gone.
I made an emergency reservation for dinner last night. I was out to dinner with a journalist friend of mine and I had to cancel the emergency reservation. I had like 10 minutes to cancel it or I was going to be charged $50, darling.
Well, but the restaurant industry is hurting and we are going to get into that in this episode. I would love to chat with you solo for hours and hours, but we do have a celebrity guest waiting.
No, we have a celebrity guest and he has a lot of other engagements to get to. Red carpets to walk.
Dinners, breakfasts, meetings, pitch meetings,
doors
magazine shoots.
Doors to slam in the face of eager youngins trying to make it in the industry.
Agents to hang up on and then call back again.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about, of course, none other than one
the
of
funniest
the most
man in
important
the
people in the industry. I mean, I don't think we would be here.
No, you can't go a day with someone not saying he's doing blank.
No, I know. I mean, it's he's doing blank.
He's doing blank.
He's doing blank. And I It's actually insane. Well, it's funny because, and it's for that very reason that I always think of this person I'm about to introduce as older than me, and yet I don't think he is.
Right, now we're putting him into like legendary, like,
no, it
Joan
is, it
Rivers
is very
status.
Legend. No, we managed to coax Joan Crawford out of her bedroom for an hour, so let's not waste this time.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, star of the Up the New Peacock special.
Would it kill you to laugh?
John
Early.
Hello, darling.
Darling.
What a treat.
Oh, wait, how old are you, Stephen? Do you want to say that? We can bleep it out.
It's no, it's fine. Because
you should be ashamed.
Be ashamed.
I'm wallowing in the shame of this new age. It's one of the most obscene ages there is. I just turned 35.
Oh, 34.
Oh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When do I? January. 35.
Okay,
literally,
so you
as
were...
you were talking about my age, I literally was thinking I was 32.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like, and so does Grindr.
Okay. Hot take incoming is someone who's also sadly 30 beep. Yeah. 35. I think 32 is sadder than 35 because 35 is like divorced age.
It's dignified.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah, divorced as fun. I mean, it all depends on what kind of divorce, because it's like, is divorce Sheryl Crow in the open top convertible? Then it's fabulous, right? But is divorce like...
Did you just watch the documentary or something?
I feel so fresh
in the mind.
I haven't seen it.
No, I've been
Sheryl
Crow
is always like, right here when I wake up. She's
sorry,
the first
I've been
thing.
Watching
Cheryl.
Your special on repeat. So,
thank you.
Also, the Real World Homecoming New Orleans reunion special. So,
well, listen. You know, speaking of cinema and the stage and art and literature, we read a book this week, and John, you read it as well.
I read half.
Okay, that's fine. That'll
and you
do.
Suggested it. And
literally, I suggested it and I read half. And I made you guys read like a 600-page book.
I will say, though, I'm very grateful. Thank you so much.
Good.
I will say, and I'm not pulling anyone's chain here, this is the favorite book that I've read for this pod in maybe a year or something. I could not put this book down. And so rarely has that happened. Usually I am cramming for the quiz.
Yeah.
Like right before class.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, it's soiled with the chlorinated water of the Standard Pool in Miami. You know, it's covered in my tears as I was staying up till 3 a.m. in bed reading it. I mean, I could not put this down.
This thrills me. Because I have to say, part of why I recommended it, right now I need some good writing.
Yes.
Right. And I knew to trust Tina. Like, I don't really know much about her, but I knew, like, from the way she's spoken about, that I could trust her.
So let's get the cat out of the bag. Yeah. The book we read is The Vanity Fair Diaries, Power, Wealth, Celebrity, and Dreams, My Years at the Magazine That Defined a Decade.
By Tina.
Tina Brown.
Woo.
Woo. You know, Tina Brown, obviously, darling. The
British
infamous
media titan.
British media titan, editor of Vanity Fair magazine in the 80s, and really responsible for turning that magazine around and making it one of the most important
magazines, you know, still to our day.
And as it was on its deathbed, darling.
No, it was gasping for
No, everyone was terribly embarrassed by it. I mean,
desperately tried to find the Twyla Tharp ad she was describing of like the billboard for like the dying version right before she came on. There were all these like apparently really embarrassing like billboards, and I couldn't find them anywhere.
She's at the Tatler offices in London. So she used to run this kind of this society rag, Tatler, you know, which was always publishing all the gossip and dirty stories of the royals and
dirty
everyone else.
Dirty little royal Diana, Fergie. I keep on going, by the way, into like kind of like grand dame accent for her.
Yeah.
But it is just more straight up British because I did half book, half audio. And she's much more just like curt
nasal.
British. Yeah, nasal, like, oh, I went to the Four Seasons and then this and I was here and then I went here and I got in a cab.
Yes, I do think it is that. I agree because reading the writing, you start to want to go into a Peggy or a Diana Vreeland place. And, you know, she's
Diana
in this
Vreeland comes up a lot. And we'll
yes, you know, she's living in Vreeland's shadow and aren't we all?
And so her, it's so crazy because like the way they talk about that Diana Vreeland, editor of Harper's Bazaar, is that, right, she was like taking limos two blocks down, But the vibe I get from all of the Vanity Fair Diaries first takeaways,
They're constantly in a limo.
They're constantly in a limo, and I'm assuming every single lunch, which happens every other sentence, is being paid for on a Vanity Fair.
Yeah, they're all there. It's all
dining card.
Counting. Because she talks about how she's like, oh, darling, I felt dreadfully poor, and everyone in New York is constantly trying to make money, and it's never enough. And she's only making $125,000 a year at the beginning, and she's got this two-bedroom apartment that's full of doilies, and she's renting from some old baddie woman that sounds awful. But then I'm like,
the Mafia
the,
Don?
The one where she's like, I opened up the fridge, and there was, like, you know, a vibrator encrusted, like, Fabergé egg in there, you know? It was, like, it was awful. But then they're at the Four Seasons literally every day, sometimes
every
multiple
day.
Times a day. She's going to the Four Seasons to Le Perigord, and then back to the Four Seasons.
Well, I wanted to get your take. You know, she wrote this in 2017, or it came out in 2017, and I thought the kind of foreword where she was like, I was like very surprised. I know nothing of her politics, but like obviously I assume she's cavorted with, you know, Republican and Democrat elite alike for most of her life. But like I did think it was interesting the way she was like, it seemed like she was almost like, you know, apologizing for like the by talking about like the failure of trickle down economics and like,
yeah,
you know, I was like, oh, I like for like, did your kind of standard Democrat at that moment know to be like anti-Reagan? Or like, I thought at that moment with Trump coming out, people were like, we miss Reagan.
I got the vibe from her that she wasn't like obsessed with Reagan, but like she also like was, and she's like mostly horny for Nancy Reagan and
she's
Reagan's
so
marriage.
Horny for Nancy. The amount of descriptions in this book where it was like, and then Nancy Reagan walked in the room and she was, you know, looking classically delicious with her hot little sexy thin minx body stuffed into a tight red bodysuit dress. She couldn't have been sexier. She oozed classic 1930s glamour porn star. I wanted to fuck her on the... You're like, calm all the way down, Tina. This woman is 90. Like,
but they do... They do the iconic photo shoot of Nancy.
She's on the... So it's on the cover, and Ronnie is dipping Nancy, and she's
Nancy's
got her leg up.
And foot is up. And I guess the photographer brought in a boom box and put on a Sinatra tape. And
I love it.
And she
You
know, because of course the Reagans were like BFF with Sinatra, but I was like, damn, you really listen all the time too. And then she was like, and they just started gossiping like old lovebirds. Mm-hmm. Like, they hadn't talked in days and just started dancing and talking. And I was like, okay, so Ronald and Nancy were like fucking.
They were fucking and they were whispering and they had whispered nothings. And then, well, then later in the book when she's
literally
doing their kind of like,
yeah, literally.
He's like,
I think she... She kind of does like imply that later when it's like the photo shoot for their like goodbye from the White House. And like, she's like, I don't know what Ronald was talking about, but he seemed to be whispering to Nancy a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, he was just full in.
The kiss is a lot. It's gross.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to be.
No,
the
you
way
can say
gerophobic.
It.
You actually are being deeply ageist, but the problem is the way their lips are touching, it's very like dry and like
oh my God.
Pursed and
well also
the
you know Nancy
time.
Wore like the heaviest, most like chalky thick red Estee Lauder lipstick that
no I know
it, like pure wax.
She was really not giving Kylie.
No, it wasn't
liner.
Like a Kylie like lip
nude
pillow.
Yeah. Pre Kylie nude. But you know, to your point, John, you know, about her politics,
I was just, it did feel like she was like a little self-conscious in the beginning
very
about
much
what we were
so.
About to get into.
Very much so. And, I'm sure there was, like, you know, a whole team of people who were telling her. And, she, you know, because she started the Daily Beast in 2010. And so I think, you know, she's very aware of what the online left is saying, what Twitter's saying. So I'm sure there was, like, gays telling her just, like, you know, like, trickle down was bad. The 80s were bad. Like, communism is good. So, like, you need to kind of say that, like, just really make it clear that this was about, like, the excess of the 80s. But, like, the 80s, like, were, like, a dark time in this way when we think about it and we look back. because of course, like, when you actually read the book is brilliant because it is this record of the 80s, and it
totally.
Is as David Frum says in the back of the book, it chronicles like the high noon and the high noon and then the dusk of the Reagan era. the rise of that 80s excess and the excitement and the luxury and the opulence. And then, you know, when it all comes crashing down. And she talks, you know, quite brilliantly in her diaries in the book about how Vanity Fair needs to stay with the moment and how Vanity Fair can sort of luxuriate in the opulence of it and the parties and the Kissinger at dinner and all of it. And the celebrities smoking their cigars and Jack Nicholson. But then we also need to chronicle the fallout. We need to chronicle the misbehavior, the Wall Street tycoons, like who were the green monsters. And you know, that the sort of Gordon Gekko, that movie when Wall Street came out with Michael Douglas, it was sort of the perfect turning point of like, okay, now we can villainize the masters of the universe. And we need to still be at the top of it.
But I stopped right where she was like, people were starting to get in her inner circle were starting to get mad at her for like chronicling the excesses and being, you know, like Ariana Huffington was pissed right where I left.
Oh
my God, the Huffington wedding.
Okay, wait.
Huge.
She basically classically portrays Michael Huffington, like Ariana's famous bisexual now ex-husband, as like an evil bisexual villain.
I'm obsessed with the wedding being 900 people. And she was like, she was like, the receiving line lasted till 10 p.m. And of course, my husband like got stuck talking to Rupert Murdoch, who he hated. But like, yeah. Then they actually had an amazing time talking about like how the union did this or whatever.
Yeah, sure. About how he like crushed the union.
I mean, crushed the union. And he was like, it was actually like, really funny how you did crush the union, Rupert. Like, they didn't need it. Okay, wait, I have this line here from the wedding. Ariana herself looked amazing, a cross between Callas and Queen Alexandra. Always like, Callas is always just like last name only. We all know who we're talking about. It's Maria, darling. Galanos had made her a skin-tight, high-throated white lace gown and a coronet of orchids, and her hair was scraped back to reveal the regal nose. She was anorexically slim. To get to this size, she must have lived on nothing but communion wafers for a month. And then... the groom is a mystery, really. A tall glass of water with a weak smile. That's it! Just being like, the groom seems like a faggot. Not quite sure how to say this. I want to say faggot. Tall glass of water, weak smile. Just like hiding something. Just like evil bisexual hiding something.
Yeah, weak smile. Okay, I want to talk about Tina and her relationship with her husband.
Her chin.
With Harry. 25 years her 25 senior. Years editor old. Of the Sunday Times. And the Times of London, and of course he got in a huge row with Rupert Murdoch in London. And
they're always, they're like never together, and she's like, well, we're career driven, you know, and she wouldn't want it any other way.
And he's always in D.C. editing U.S. News World Report, and then he's been wooed by Cy Newhouse to come at a Condé Nast Traveler, but then he's still in London for the launch of his third book about the Sunday Times, and he's fighting with Murdoch, and they're on the train to Quoog, but like...
There
is a lot of time when they're like apart for 2 years, and she's been like, but that's what's so beautiful about a relationship.
Exactly alike, I should say.
But right, they're like two. Okay, so I truly thought the cover of this was Diana, and it was about like her writing about Diana,
right? Yeah. Well, she says in the book, she was like, whose looks I'm so often compared to, and in this kind of way where she pretends she doesn't see it, and it's like, miss,
come on,
you have the same like mannish British face, because you know British women have those mannish faces.
Yeah, and I thought she would be,
and quite
in my
beautiful
mind,
and elegant, but
like I guess I imagined her this brunette, like she looks kind of more stuck up than she is visually. Mm-hmm. I found. But, you know, maybe that's just that British face, and it's my kind of American
mindset. And it's also the coif, the 80s coif, like that feathered helmet that she's doing. She's doing the feathered Diana helmet. So I think maybe that's where maybe...
the kind of early Natalie Maines. Early Dixie chick kind of...
yeah. No, now you... it is really Natalie Maines. Do you think Tina Brown, like, she got, like, to her desk sent, like, the big hit Dixie Chicks CD and, like, read about the bush, and she's unwrapping the plastic, like, putting it in her Bose 10-disc changer, just being like, you know, I wouldn't normally listen to this type of music, but it is... interesting. And
it's newsworthy. And I have to go where the conversation is, darling. And they've managed to put their finger on the pulse.
Shut up and sing. Well, I just left off at the point at which she was like, I'm so busy that I have no time for culture, you know, which is obviously
I love like that. 22. I really related to that. Yeah. Because you have to write about it. You have to have your finger on the pulse. And then she's like, I don't even know what books are happening. I mean, you know, I feel this way all the time, you know, even though I literally have a podcast where I read a book a week, I'm always thinking, God, Dolly, I never read. I have no idea what's on television. And I don't know what the kids are listening
and
to.
And yet you live right next to the quad.
Right. I'm in the center of it all. I mean, I'm right on campus. And yet I feel like I'm completely out of the loop. And that's New York for you.
Breakfast at Grey Dog.
Lunch at Jack and Frida.
Celebrity Book Club.
This episode is sponsored by ZocDoc.
You're trying to find a cause for your symptoms.
Achy back, headache, runny nose, itchy eye, wart on my genitals.
So let me guess, you stumble down a TikTok rabbit hole full of questionable advice from so-called experts.
Suddenly I have cancer? No thank you.
There are better ways to get the answers you want and the care you deserve from trusted professionals and not random people on the internet. Though randoms, I love you, and my TikTok addiction, yeah, it stands.
But I'm sorry, Lily, you shouldn't be getting medical advice from some girl in her grandmother's basement in Toronto.
ZocDoc helps you find expert doctors and medical professionals that specialize in the care you need and deliver the type of experience you want.
That's right. Ditch the talk, get the doc. ZocDoc is the only free app that lets you find and book doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance, are available when you need them, and treat almost every condition under the sun.
No more doctor roulette or scouring the internet for questionable reviews. With ZocDoc, you have a trusted guide to connect you to your favorite doctor you haven't met yet.
I love a trusted guide, like the time I climbed to Machu Picchu on the Inca Trail with a team of Sherpas. Millions of people use ZocDoc's free app to find and book a doctor in their neighborhood who is patient-reviewed and fits their needs and schedule just right. So find your Sherpa at ZocDoc.com. Go to ZocDoc.com/bookclub and download the ZocDoc app for free.
Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. Slay. Many are available within 24 hours. That's ZOCDOC.com/bookclub. ZocDoc.com/bookclub.
Ditch the talk. She gets that gorgeous apartment on Sutton Place. The dream apartment.
The dream. That actually, I did find that very empowering as a like kind of a person who likes antiquey things. As that kind of gay. Like, that she was ultimately like, I don't have to live in a modern place.
It was so Carrie, like, and just like that, where she, like, had this initial reaction of being like, oh, I'm this tired old British tart. Like, I want a new sexy American, a modern place. And then she moves into, like, what's obviously this very awkward, like, old woman's apartment that she's renting that's, like, so, like, big gross 80s plastic, and the woman has all the Fabergé eggs on top of it, and she's kind of like, I don't need my modern American dream. I want
just
parquet floors, and I want molding, and I want London.
Also, I feel like Tina Brown is very, I imagine her relationship with Harry, like, not so Carrie and Mr. Big, but like a little bit in this way where, like, she is being so, like, to her friends, being like, Harry's the best and he's the best husband and this is what a real marriage is, but then, like, I feel like he shows up to her friends and they are like, who is this guy? Like, don't you get a sense he's, like, no one really kind of maybe has met Harry a bit?
Well, no, but yes and no. Lily, that's unfair because
careful.
Okay, please don't talk about Tina and Harry that way.
Because Harry has his own career. He's a titan of his own, and he's literally for a huge part of the marriage, he's 2 floors below at Condé Nast working at Traveler. And then everyone obviously knows him from his work at the Times and Sunday Times and his row with Murdoch. And, you know, when they're having these dinner parties that Henry Kissinger is at, it's like, you know, people know Harry from all of it. I mean, he had a good 20 years on her in the London media world.
No, society does. I'm talking about, like, her chicas, but I guess that begs the question, is Annie Leibovitz her main chica?
What's the interesting thing? Well, I feel like her main chicas are maybe some of her, like, employees. I mean,
right, she's always like Tracy,
Tracy Pam McCarthy, PV. I love the PV. PVZ, so the PVZ character is the, like, HR woman at Condé, who's always the one who's like has to, like, end up firing people, but, like, does it in this way where she gives them, like, a package, and, like, Tina's always like, I love the American euphemisms for, like, letting someone go with their package, and, like, PVC, she has like describes her as having this like this tight bun and this steely stare, but like a weird undercurrent of warmth. And she's just she makes people feel like they're being promoted while they're being fired.
I did think I mean, because it's very easy to romanticize any other time, but now, you know,
absolutely.
Yes. And so it was actually nice to hear her complaining about like the psychobabble of like PR and like, you know, and like the lack of kind of like the lack of like irony or wit, you know, compared to the UK, and like, oh, you know, it must have been so much better then. And I was like, but it seemed like there were similar frustrations with like the media class.
Yes. Then.
And she's like, is so like, ugh, like, can we not, like, even though it seems like she's celebrating the rich, like every second of her day, she is like, ugh, like the rich are boring. Like, let's celebrate like Perry Ellis, who like she's not considering. Yeah. Like.
And she really does seem to like, constantly talk about how when she's in New York, she, I mean, I wonder if she were getting as rich as she was getting in New York in the UK, if she would also feel the need to hustle. But she does seem to always be talking about a distinctly American kind of,
you know, it
feeling
reminded,
of needing to hustle.
It reminded me of a line I remember reading in another book, another like very sort of intellectually titan book called *Eat, Pray, Love* by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she talks about Lisbeth Gilbert, and Lisbeth talks about how every city has a word that defines the city, and she was like, Rome. The word for Rome was sex. Rome is defined by sex. Everyone wants to get it. How do I get it? Where do I get it? How can I look it? But the word for New York is success. Mm, and everyone is so hell-bent on success here and climbing the ladder and getting more money. And it's never enough. And, you know,
but if you take out the X, you get sex.
You get sex. Ooh. And sex and success are the same thing.
Sex and success. And Tina doesn't, she does seem very devoted. Like, I feel like she's never really, like, flirting at a dinner party.
No, I guess, there's that scene with Warren Beatty at the Four Seasons.
Oh, yes. And she's
where
like,
he is laid it on thick.
Oh, that was so, you thought he was being fully flirtatious, not just trying to create a kind of actorly mystique.
Yeah, that's what I got.
To be eventually profiled.
Oh, I mean, yes. I guess that's a hard both. I think that he would have fucked her if like she came up to his room. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Like him bringing the phone
that
to
was
the
insane.
Table to call Diana Vreeland to be like, "We love you." He sounds awful.
I know. It was so cringe and insane. It's like, and the person's bringing the landline over on like a silver platter. But then did he memorize Diana Vreeland's number and he's just like beep boop beep.
Yeah.
And then
like,
and then
that's
he's like,
so
I'm at lunch with Tina. We love you. Best.
Like, sorry, that is so gay, even though Warren Beatty is like supposedly like the straightest, like sexiest man of the 80s.
By the way, to Madonna or engaged or
yeah,
just
engaged
dated.
To Madonna has Diana Vreeland's landline memorized.
That was like, I was like, there's a straight man has Diana Vreeland's landline memorized?
But this is what, you know, we're talking about. It's like, why can't a straight man memorize a fabulous
editor? And this is what we've lost.
Editor.
This is what we've lost.
Well, men used to be okay for straight men to like have culture and request the landline to just have a quick little day call to DV.
Also, like him requesting a lunch with Tina Brown to ultimately just be like, I don't want to be profiled, is absolutely psychotic.
Okay, can I dare you, truth or dare, John? Can I dare you to do that to
so
someone?
I don't get a choice?
Yeah. Just like the editor of Home and Garden. of Nash-
Red Book.
Of Red Book.
I want a full fucking spread in Red Book.
You can like pull out
in the
a
next
poster.
2 years.
Wait, but then who is he calling during the lunch? He's like, bring over the phone.
Yeah. They bring over my cell phone.
They bring over your cell phone.
You're
like,
you
we're calling Marc Maron, darling. Let's just call him right up.
We love you over here at Red Book.
Steven, as a person of journalism experience, I'm curious to know what this was like for you. Reading a book about the kind of heydays of print magazine and
this book for me might have best been seen through the eyes of my, I'll say it, boyfriend. when I was poolside reading this book and basically every three pages stopping and going, that is so true. And then just like getting into like a full on 45 minute conversation with myself out loud, just being like, and no one does this anymore. And this is the problem with interview. Yes. And it was a problem then. And honey, it still is. I was really interesting. I mean, first of all, I mean, God, where do we begin? I mean, the budgets that magazine had in the 80s, like the power that a magazine could have.
Yeah.
The living in a world before goddamn Twitter and the internet, oh, when people actually waited to get this thing in their hands and that,
yes,
they wanted, and like the fact that Vanity Fair, and what she brilliantly did at Vanity Fair was like, you know, she, no one thought that you could have this magazine that had such a
fashion,
high-low mix,
culture, mm-hmm, politics,
and had theater, the humor and also had the hard news and had that levity and that edgy perspective and that sophistication, like all in one point of view. And they were like, well, you have to have a fashion magazine, or it has to be a film magazine, or it has to be a literary
and imagine
magazine.
Just like a selection of articles curated for you by smart people versus like every single day being like absolutely pummeled with, yeah, like just
Fred,
milk toast.
Fred. Right.
Sorry, quick, Will and Grace. Will and Grace are trying to figure out if this guy that they both have a crush on is gay. And so they go into his apartment to look at his bathroom magazines to figure out. They go in. The magazine, Vanity Fair. They still, yeah, can't figure it out.
That's Wait, amazing. I love that.
And also that, like, a magazine would be such a household name and have such clear cultural connotations that, like, a multi-cam sitcom could, like, use that as a joke that, like, all of America would understand.
You can't do that in Sheldon.
No, I mean, what magazine would you say? You know,
yeah.
Entertainment Weekly.
Literally,
I mean,
yeah.
I will say, so what? One thing I loved about what she did at Vanity Fair is there was such a respect for the reader's intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I think about the headlines that they had. So she has this thing called the Rule of Three, where she's like, we really turned around at Vanity Fair when we had three really major news covers that like generated news in and of themselves. So there was the Ronald Reagan one with Nancy, and the headline was The Reagan Stomp. And it was, mm-hmm, like brilliant because it was about them winning re-election, and it wasn't like saying that was good or bad in a way. It was saying like, this is the moment we're living in and we're capturing the zeitgeist. Like, we are in the middle of the XS80s. Yes. Like, everyone wants the party to keep going, and Reagan won in a landslide, and like, that's what's happening. And it was like, the editorialization was like, it was so obvious, but it also like had a little bit of like cleverness and a metaphor to it. Like, you know, he's stomping out the competition. He's like, you know, it's like we're stomping on the little people, but we're enjoying the stomp, you know? And mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm, you would never have language like that on the cover of magazines today.
No.
The same thing with the Diana cover, which was another one of her Rule of Three. The headline was The Mouse That Roared, which,
oh, wait,
I'm obsessed with.
Brilliant.
You would never see metaphor like, you know, like that kind of editorialization on a magazine.
They're not
on anything.
That. They're not giving that to Kate.
No. Well, no. She certainly isn't roaring, and nor is she a mouse. But, oh, okay. Well, and I thought of this. So I was in the airport, you know, as I said, I was coming back on the red eye from Miami. And when I take a plane, it's always a red eye. I don't care what time it's leaving.
I took a red eye leaving at 12. We arrived at 1:50. It was a red eye. It was a JetBlue red eye.
My eyes, you know, danced across Hudson News, and they landed on Vanity Fair at the newsstand. And
how's it doing?
The cover was, it was the saddest thing I've ever, it was an absolute tragedy. It just said Star Wars. And then there was the cast of the latest TV show.
No.
No, nothing. It was devastating.
That's
Isn't
so
that the
sad.
Word? Isn't that awful?
I know.
Star Wars.
Like,
how dumb are we? How dumb are we, and how dumb do they think we are, and how right are they? I mean, it's just awful. Are you in Star Wars on Hulu Plus?
Yeah.
Yes. I should just say we're going to have to cut all that because
we can cut that one.
It's me and Daisy Ridley.
Right. You're both in R234 and you're like...
But I loved also, obviously, I'm a giant Wallace Shawn fan, and I loved her lunch with Wallace Shawn where he says America has no memory, and she keeps like bringing that back.
Her quote, just like, she's always just, you know, always her, she's her first critic, even if she knows it's fabulous. And this is a cover she realizes is like bad. Meanwhile, I got into a ludicrous PR flack attack when I found her Brit's cover of Deborah Winger unacceptably dull and depressing. Rich shot her for the February cover in a white terry bathrobe looking morose. Since the shoot had gone quite well, only 2 hours late is a feat for her, I am told. We asked if we could do a second shoot to get a really good cover out of it. At this, Pat Kingsley, yes, the hypermedic power craze PR from PMK threw a tantrum. She called saying Jane Sarkin an asshole and a fuck up and suggested VF go screw itself. It's just like the drama.
The drama.
There's this little passage about America that I thought was so devastating and true. After the beauty of the ranch, the Tucson Mall was disorienting and depressing, a sprawling, characterless mess of Kmarts and gas stations and drugstores. As we drove around in the blinding rain or cruised down the fluorescent-lit aisles of throbbing products in the gigantic pharmacy where we went to collect G's prescriptions, her autistic child, I thought how this is an America I will never warm to. America as a huge, vacant, product-filled, centerless, culturally sterile parking lot.
There's no center. There's no center.
There's no center. I love the word
center. And therefore,
centerless
the center cannot hold.
Then that center will absolutely not hold because it's not there. And I, you know, because I, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot about how awful the landscape is and how it breeds the sort of violence that we've now become so inured to. But you know, the idea of the centerlessness is so true because there are no institutions.
There
you know,
are no
there
institutions.
Are, there are no cult. There's no culture to hold on to. In some of the country, there's just absolutely nothing but products. But these sterile, fluorescent like products in these awful, awful environments. And you know, what's it going to do? It's going to drive you insane, and it does. And everyone's
well. Will you tell me? Will you fill me in? Like, what happens in the second half?
So yeah, eventually she does realize that her child has Asperger's, but now he works at a nonprofit, and everyone loves his charming sense of humor.
She has like such an Angelina Jolie moment with her nanny, where she like overhears.
Wait.
She overhears the nanny just being like on the phone, just being like, Georgie loves me. Like she's a bad mother. Like he should be mine. Yeah. And this is at their
Juanita,
their summer
the Filipina.
House. Their summer house in Quag.
In Quag.
Quag, where I have Quag. And I have a personal relationship to Quag in the fact that once I went to a animal rescue there where they house injured owls.
No.
Yes, and beautiful. It's like it's all these like owls and gorgeous eagles and like foxes that were like found on the side of the road with like one leaf left, and once an eagle was stolen from there.
Wow!
I think it was the nanny. I think
it was Tina.
It was Juanita. Juanita
stole this eagle.
Juanita, the villainous Filipina.
Anyway, so she of course, this is just so like classic, like mommy nanny drama. And then she like goes up to her and she's like, "Get out of my house!" And then
she's like, "Pack your stuff right now!" And then she calls the like doorman to come up and take guard. Because she's like worried that Juanita's gonna stab her with a letter opener.
Oh, okay, kind of can't believe she didn't cut that part.
I like when she. Yeah, when
I know.
She
I,
talks.
Yeah, her gays are just like, oh, honey, leave that in.
Well, I love because when she hires Juanita, she's like, I wanted an experienced middle-aged nurse.
Same.
Like, I didn't want some, I didn't want some like bouncy au pair from Ireland coming over here. Like, nor did I want one of these, like, you know, haggard war horses. Like, I want like an experienced mom who's going to be mom shit. But then, yeah. So then Juanita is like talking shit about her and she's like, get out.
Wow. That's huge.
Would you, John, to just not to pry, but for your two beautiful daughters, what kind of nanny would you look for? Would you hire older?
We have not done nannies. No, we don't. We just don't. We really agreed if we're going to do this, we're going to take care of them ourselves.
Right.
Wow.
And it takes a village. And would you ever be like, oh, but neighbors and friends and aunts and folks, like,
are
we welcome?
And we pay those neighbors, but we
pay our chosen. But we don't actually hire nanny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hoping to do is sort of, like, somehow acquire, like, a child that is already of 7 age or whatever. Yeah.
Adoption.
adoption seems a little expensive, and it seems a little unromantic to me,
I agree.
I'm paying $80,000. I'd rather just kind of get one.
I kind of want that Raising Helen situation. Not that I want my sister to die, but you know what I mean? It's like a little more, you just get a 7-year-old, and you're like, it's just us, bud.
Wait, can I just quickly say for the listeners at home, look up Klaus and Sonny. Or, I mean,
you talk about Klaus von Bülow?
Yeah.
The evil murderer?
I knew nothing about that.
Wait, but so was he? I didn't know anything about it either. She puts this guy who's been accused of murder, like does a photo shoot with her Brits or whatever on the cover, and it's one of her news making stories. And like, and it's him and his like new wife, and she's just like caught in the act, like caught by Dominic Dunn, like snapped by Helmut Newton. And she's really going for it. And it made me think, you know, the last time there was actually a real, like, you know,
murderer.
Edgy pushing cover was when Rolling Stone put the Boston Bomber on the cover. Remember? And they had that sexy photo of him.
Boston that, Strong.
That hot, sexy teen.
So fun.
And
yeah,
you know,
he was
so
captured
fine.
Near my mother's house.
No, excuse me. Yeah. I mean, Jahar. I mean, he can put his bomb under my mailbox any day of the week. But it was like, you know, but that was the last time anyone took a risk like that, you know, and there's, you know, people try to manufacture some stuff here and there, but, you know, it never really gets here. I mean, that was really, we don't see those kind of
I literally
risks.
Am also like, anymore? What was the last, like, magazine cover that... I guess, like, there's still...
Well, now it's, like, it's always... There's a fake magazine called just, like, Flower. And it's, like, Kendall's being, like, so excited to, like, share with you three of my upcoming four Flower covers.
Or it's, like, Zendaya in a suit. And people are like,
and it's always Zendaya. It's literally... Always Zendaya in a suit. And everyone is just like, incredible. And then adding 17 makeup artists and stylists. And just being like, I've never been prouder to work
never
on something.
Been
Everyone's
more
like,
thankful.
This is so brave to be thankful.
John, what's the most amount of people you think you've thanked in a post?
Oh my God. That's a really good question. Probably like 16.
Celebrity Book Club.
Darling, shall we meet for lunch segments?
Perfect. See you at the Four Seasons.
Perfect.
What does she wear?
What does she eat?
How does she live? So, John, this is part where we kind of pick apart the aesthetic tastes of the memoirist.
Food, lifestyle. And then we say, who are we in the book?
Yes. So in terms of fashion, I you know... She does.
It's blazers. Always, it's Bill Blass blazers. And I don't even know if he was doing, I don't think he was doing women's wear. So I take that back. But it.
She often describes her style as kind of Diana-y. And she's like, oh, I put. I mean, I love the way she describes clothes. Like when she has the meeting with Cy Newhouse, like for when she's originally going to get like hired as the editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. And she's like, I went and I bought this Chloe dress that was like this big shoulder pad, like long black dress. And then she was like, it turns out the Chloe dress was a mistake. And, like, I should have never bought it. And it was, like, way too interview. So, like, I put in a more Diana number of a tweed skirt and, like, a backless button down that was, like, casual but sexy. Mm. I feel like she's kind of the way that, like, office girls... Well, more like fashion the office girls dress now, like very the row. You know what I mean?
Well, and also Diana Core. Like everyone is trying to be Diana again. Yeah. I was obsessed with when she was talking about how Diana would just, how Prince William was like so mad at her because all Diana does is just stare at photos of herself.
Yes. Her like archives.
Yeah.
And I loved her. Like, I mean, I guess I'm no Diana.
Charles,
historian.
Not William.
Sorry, Charles Harrison. Yeah. Sorry, I'm from Boston. I don't fucking care about the royals, okay? No taxation.
But I love when she described Diana as, like, dim.
Yeah.
Like, I never, I mean, of course, but like, you only ever these days, I feel like, hear Diana described as, like, mysterious and...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this, like...
There's a phrase refreshing. That someone said, I can't remember who said it or the phrase, but it was something like she was obsessed with like the fantasy of being a princess and like obviously because like she became a princess, but like that, you know, it was like she had the like the sort of Disney idea of princess in her head and that was kind of all that was up there for her.
Yeah.
And so of course it was not going to live up to that and she had this like... you know, more philandering, like, jocular husband who wanted to, like, debate things with Camilla over martinis.
Exactly, and, like, she wasn't as intellectually curious as Camilla.
But she had this charm, and everyone saw it. And the charm was sort of bizarrely her vulnerability.
It's called being 24, honey.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, I had it too.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's my room at Buckingham Palace?
Other style thing is she mentions how like, which is also so office girl, about like how like when she's in Quogue, she like dresses like a total like mess, like peasant. She's like, ugh, I dress like disgusting when I'm in Quogue. Yeah. I'm just in like a
on
big,
weekend.
Dirty button down.
No, she's being like, I'm being such a lesbian in Quogue.
Like, I look like a huge lesbian. I'm in like this huge men's shirt. It has like stains on it. I'm gross. I'm a lesbian. But then someone does call her a lesbian and she's like, okay, you're like old fashioned out of it. Her like British friend is being like,
oh, well,
everyone
no,
in New York is a Jewish lesbian.
Oh, wait. Where you see zippy, zesty lesbian Jewesses bubbling with new ideas, I see plodding, ill-mannered, bottomlessly earnest boobies.
And he's talking about like Annie Leibovitz and Liz Smith, who like she has a rivalry with, or Liz Smith, like hates her.
Oh, the infamous gossip
columnist. The famous
gossip
columnist.
Yeah, but then sometimes she is just like, well, the Liz Smith column was good because like it did say that our circulation numbers were killing it. So she realizes it's all part of the churn.
It's all part of the game.
How does she eat? I don't think she eats very much. Mm. I think she's like a picker and a nibbler.
Yeah, like
she's
obviously
peckish.
Quite peckish.
Like, what do we think she's
British
ordering at the Four Seasons? Like,
well, she
yes.
references there's that one salad with Psy where it's like they're both getting. I do also feel like Psy is always ordering her, like being like, "We'll have two caprese's."
Yeah, I think she gets she gets the Four Seasons, and there's like a Perrier with lemon and a salad like waiting for her. Yeah, and they just know and they bring it out. And it's just this 80s wedding salad that she has every day.
She's famously allergic to alcohol.
Yeah, I mean,
but
that's
she does
what's so
drink, right? Or no?
No, she literally doesn't. And like, and that's why she has this absolutely photographic memory of every single dinner party with like Henry Kissinger and 17 other fashion designers over the course of 10 years.
Yeah.
And it made me a little bit jealous in this way. I was like, God, you know, would I be so much better and smarter and more with it if I could remember every fucking word people said if I wasn't drinking?
I mean, do you keep a diary?
No.
No. Do you keep a diary,
no.
John?
I don't take photos. I don't keep a diary.
Okay.
No.
God, you're unplugged.
I don't have a strong instinct for it, and then I regret it.
I have to say, I kept a diary last summer, and I'm so glad I did because it's absolutely fascinating. I remember stuff that I would never have remembered, and I write down, and it is, as Tina says, it has this the fierce urgency of the now, or like some phrase she uses, where it's like, you know, it doesn't have like, you know, the memoirists, like hindsight, you know, the brilliance of like, you know, crafting narrative, but what it has is like the element of surprise, you know, and like, you don't know what's going to happen, and then you look back and you see shit germinating. It's like, and you're like, oh my God, like that's the first time that I met that person. I had no idea that they were going to become this character, like only 6 weeks later. Yes.
I'll do like I feel like in a period of time where I'll be like 3 weeks, I'll do it and then I stop and then I do it like another 3 weeks later. So consistency. Yeah. But
let's all maybe resolve to try and be a little bit more diaristic.
I mean, I also was like, maybe if I didn't drink, I would have the energy to like go to dinner parties like 7 days a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Was this the age of the balsamic drizzle?
I think
balsamic was like getting invented around this time.
Yeah, I think it was happening. Like, I bet maybe in 87.
They were in a lab, like, there was like a Milwaukee lab. Like.
Also, like, she, you know, I bet like one summer. Oh, because she hires also a chef for Quogue.
Well, because,
oh my God,
well,
Kristen or something? I wrote
this
down.
This is my question about
huge.
All
Kristen, the student.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
Kelly.
Kelly, the student, she's like, ugh, it's so fabulous to like just be rich and be like to get off the train and like have someone cooking. And she calls it cutting board chopping block, which is all just British, I guess. And she's like, oh, I wish I could be one of those powerful women who then carelessly just creates a fabulous meal on a chopping block.
Yeah. But she just simply can't. But then she's having all of these dinner parties at her house with Harry. And I'm like, who's cooking? There must be a chef in New York as well.
Kelly.
She's pulling Kelly from Quogue back to Manhattan.
Yeah. Now, John, you're a dinner party.
I'm a dinner queen.
Do you do what Tina does, which I'm desperate to start in my own life, which is like she invites like a mix of 8 people and there's heads of state and like rock stars and actresses,
like, it's
and
not
they're all
your
mixing.
Best friends. You're like,
and it's all about the seating chart and like, you know, curating it for maximum frisson, which is her favorite word, by the way. Okay, how does she live? I think she's kind of like British maximalist in that way, where it's like jewel toned sofas,
chic.
Country chic, like massive coffee table books piled. But I don't think it's monochromatic. I think it like there's like, you know, the pink chintzy curtains and then the like the dark green sofa and then the red sofa and
like
then
a chipping purple paint.
like a deliberately chipping purple paint on like a dresser. Like, you know what I mean? Like kind of country.
Okay. British country. But
like a patina posh. Or something. Because well, the thing is, because she is always taking pains to say she's not like so posh.
She mentions
She's like, I'm an absolute pauper. I'm only making $600,000 a year.
Buying these two massive desks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And sending one to the country.
One to New York and one to the country.
And then she's like I used to do as a girl when I would order from magazines. And it would show up in a giant truck and my parents would be so mad. It's like, how did you have the money to order as a girl?
It's very all those viral tweets that are so like, so my 6-month-year-old baby took my iPad and ordered all of this from Amazon. Someone's not getting like mommy's milk.
My tits.
My tits today.
gross mom Twitter.
Yeah, she's Tina as a child, like filling out like the, you know, what Herod's catalog.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it must have been not that expensive. I mean, she must have been ordering just like a $15 pillow, you know?
But also her dad like ran like a movie studio or something. Like she was rich.
But I feel like in that way where, you know, Britain had a middle class, you know, it was the 60s. It was the 60s. It was post-war Britain. Like there was a middle class. And, you know, we didn't have the extreme equality that we started to see in the Reagan years, thanks to trickle-down economics, which now we know is a bad thing.
Now we know, now that I'm writing my diary.
Yes. okay, who are you in the book? Here's my question for you. Am I... Jerry Zipkin, Nancy Reagan's like gossipy gay best
her
friend.
Little gay.
her just like ratty little gay that's like showing
I don't
up at
think
every event
you're
and talking
actually
shit.
I'll say this. I don't think you're obsessed with women that much. That
thank you.
You like would be
that I would attach myself to a Nancy.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see that.
No.
Yeah.
John, are you...
Yeah, I don't have any strong...
I'll say this. Are you, like, one of Leo's, like, the
I'm gays? George.
You're
oh, are you one of the many men who dies of AIDS over the course
well,
of the
Well, that's what I was going to say. Maybe yeah. I am.
It is quite... I mean, I do say, you know, the AIDS saga is quite... It's quite real. I like the way that it just keeps coming up in this real way.
Yeah.
And she's like... The scene where she's talking to the editor and they both realize that he's going to die and they both just start crying in her office. Like,
yeah.
That really, like, got me really choked up. Like, that was so beautiful and poignant and, like, she's just being so honest about it. And just being like, this is awful. Everyone we know is dying.
One of the first people who died when she was like... You know, when she found out he has AIDS and she's like, I mean... I'll be honest, I don't like him.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. I love that. She was like, but it's still, like, horrifying, you know?
Like, yeah. Or, like, the other guy, she was like, it's so sad because we kind of, like, hadn't talked for, like, 3 years since Tatler, and he was always such kind of a bitch, but this is an awful end for him. And especially with the being closeted, she's like, it's really sad. Like,
yeah.
It's so real. I mean, she's such a, like, I'm putting her in the Marianne Williamson, like, Straight Woman Hall of Fame, I feel like, for the way that she just
she's
seems
amazing.
So understanding and, like,
right, she's not just
sympathetic.
Not really mentioning it and then having this 2017, like, afterlog about it, just being like, and of course AIDS was so bad during that time. Like, you see it in the diary.
In real time.
Yeah.
Over time. Stephen, wait, maybe you're Leo, the gay guy that, like, was pushed out when she became... editor of Vanity Fair, and then he like scowls at her later.
The guy who was like running the magazine into the ground. Yeah. Oh god, I'm so old and doddering.
But you have like
but
all
you have a boyfriend.
Yeah, but you have a boyfriend and all these powerful gay guys who like hate Tina.
mortifying.
Who am I?
Who are
I don't
you?
Know. I feel like I'm working.
You're
it.
Ronald Reagan with Alzheimer's.
No, I
Maya's leading you around whispering in your ear like, no, no, she's great. She's having so much fun.
People are looking at us being like, oh, they still got it. I'm just out to lunch.
Just like sucking on a like a little hard candy.
Little Werther's.
Listen, I give this book like absolutely like 5 best-selling covers out of 5. This truly, it's thrilling, it's brilliant, it's personal, it's vulnerable, it's so filled with fucking tea and gossip and names and descriptions of dinners and dresses. It's like everything you could want. And it's historical. And she has, you know, history happens in these pages, but, you know, in this beautiful eye for detail.
I'll do 5 out of 5 Caprese's. I mean, I can't really say because I only read half of it, but it made me kind of yearn for, again, just a better time when things were more kind of, there was more centralization in the media.
Yeah, yes.
There were more kind of like true, like smart curators who were like, kind of who respected the public more. You know, that was like that. And I think, and it's genuinely inspiring. I think we can all, you know, strive to be a little more rigorous.
I couldn't agree more. It's not it's the rigorous.
Yes.
And I give it 5 reservations at the wrong room in Four Seasons.
Oh my God.
Siberia, as Cy Newhouse calls it. When she's eating upstairs at the grill at the Four Seasons.
No, it's Alex. He's like, Tina, I heard you had lunch today. And she's like, yes, at the Four Seasons. She goes, yes, but I heard you were in Siberia.
Well, I wouldn't have been turned away, but Stephen was turned away from last week on his birthday because he was wearing shorts. And they were still...
No.
I mean, we want to go back to the 80s. That was with...
We couldn't wear shorts.
That was pretty
80s. That
was
something I don't think we need to go back to. Because a formal short like the one I was wearing, I think, should be absolutely encouraged.
Well, we all have our opinions. I do think you should have been wearing pants and a jacket.
For sanitation reasons alone.
Darling, my legs are cleaner than the marble countertops in Quogue.
Coming off the JMZ, I doubt it.
I would never take the JMZ when you wish it upon my worst enemy. Well, John, thank you so much. I want to thank you. It's been such a pleasure to have you on. We've been such a fan of yours for so long. I hope we get to meet in person at some point.
I've been dying to meet you. You are my idol. I do hope you come back on the pod so we can do an even longer book, which is Sammy Davis Jr.'s.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah. And his.
We got like a really good rec for Sammy Davis Jr.'s book. So I would like to do that in a year's time. It was such an honor to be on this. I've been listening to this podcast since 2010. As I'm just a huge fan.
Thank you.
Well,
so thank you,
John,
guys.
You know, and to all the listeners, I want to encourage you to please go watch John Early and Caperland's new special, Would It Kill You to Laugh, on Peacock.
By the way, a lot of dinners. A lot of dinners in the special. A lot of lunches, a lot of dinners.
You and Kate, you guys love dinners.
We love dinners. We love a martini,
You love bucatini martini.
Can I ask a question, John?
Yep. Yes.
For the listeners out there, are they good? If they happen to maybe have canceled their Peacock subscription in the past 6 months, will they need to reinstate it to watch?
Well, I would ask you, why would you cancel when it's free?
Yeah, Peacock is free, Steven.
But they may have gone up to premium for like $4.99, but like you can literally watch it for free. And I would argue like it's better free with the ads because it will kind of lull you to a childlike state back when commercials used to interrupt what you're watching.
Yes, I love that. And you're on your parents' couch stuffing your face with saltines and Cheez-Its.
Yeah, I'd always binge saltines while watching TV. Yeah. That was my
junk
food.
Only if they were covered in cheddar. Melted cheddar.
Oh,
but yes, please watch it on Peacock.
And congratulations on the special, John. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This was so fun, and I love Tina Brown, and I love you guys.
We love you.
Tina heads over here. Okay. And do stick around for the VIP lounge on Friday, where we will be discussing restaurants.
More restaurants.
More restaurants, including my trip to the grill in the old Four Seasons space in the Seagram building and my trip to the symphony.
And my thoughts on classical music and opera and how classical music is boring, but how maybe I'm getting into it. So yeah, basically it's going to be a freaking crazy app. Do join us.
And you can go to patreon.com/cbcthepod to subscribe and hear all of that.
Best. Celebrity Book Club is presented by Prolog Projects. The show is produced by Benjamin Frisch. We were, you know, honestly enemies for years, but I respect his work ethic. With editorial support from Leon Nafok, Andrew Parsons, Arlena Revelo, and Madeline Kaplan. Our production manager is Priscilla Verlin. Our intern is Noah John. Original theme song by Stephen Phillips Horst. Artwork by Teddy Blanks at Chips NY. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CBCThePod. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a review and don't forget to tell your friends about us. Oh, and please don't forget to go to your patreon.com for access to the VIP lounge, our exclusive bonus podcast. It's really quite a gas.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.